You are listening to the PT and the Gib Dog podcast, episode 42. Today we're talking NBA, including the Celtics' recent 4-1 stretch and potential playoff matchups in both the East and the West. Let's do this. All right, another edition of the Gib Dog on the Road Chronicles. I imagine you're somewhere in Connecticut right now.
We should.
91
and actually hit a little traffic here. I don't know what's going on, but
beautiful.
You know, I feel like the last few times we've done this, I've been on the road. Maybe we should change the name of the podcast.
That's something that we could consider. Or you should just stop driving back and forth between Boston and New York.
Yeah, that's out of my control at this point, though, Patrick.
Yes.
Out of my control.
Yes.
But
yes.
For good reasons.
Yes.
For good reasons.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. So leaving the site of a nice Celtics win last night, a good win over the Kings, sweep the season series versus the Kings, and because we have their first round pick next year, also good for us on that front. Unfortunately, it'll probably be like the 14th pick, so not as good as what we thought. But
right, whoever goes to represent the Sacramento Kings, whether it be Vlade Divac or I think Peja Stojakovic. So okay, let's take Peja Stojakovic. He's the poor bastard who has to go and sit there, who his team has the 14th. I mean, the worst chance of vaulting in the lottery or getting the first pick. Like, I don't know why the team with the 14th best odds even bothers going. Like, you just look at him, like, you know where your pick's going to end up. And
yep.
Unfortunately, yep. That this year is going to be the Sacramento Kings, both for, well, not so much for them, but for us. So,
yeah. Well, you know, if it was one, it would go to Philly. So, silver lining is that at least it's not going to a number. They will not get the first pick, but, you know, late lottery.
They could vault in the 2 or 3. Hey.
That would be nice. That would be nice. But I mean, more importantly, the win moves the Celtics to 42-27, still firmly in the 5 seed, but 2 games back of the Pacers at the 3, Philly in the 4. If we had done this podcast a week and a half ago, I think it would have been a pretty different vibe. But 4-1 over the last 5 games, some nice wins over the Warriors, the Lakers, sweeping the Kings, and then a loss to the Clippers, who just played out of their minds on, I think it was Sunday night.
They shot like an unreal percentage. Like, that was, I mean, part of that, of course, was, you know, the Celtics, I think, looking a little bit disinterested, you know, more so on the defensive end of the floor. I think Kyrie Irving had it right. He's like, we just need to get out of L.A. Like, they were in L.A. for, like, 6 nights. The temptation of being in L.A. for NBA basketball players for, like, almost a week, like, that's realistic. That's legit. That's the same stuff you hear about NBA teams. They say Atlanta is like the worst city in the world to be, to be an NBA player on the road. Just all the temptations that come with the nightlife in Atlanta. You gotta think there's certainly a similar situation in Los Angeles. So I think it was time to get home. Get out of L.A. Kyrie Irving absolutely hit the nail on the head with that comment after that loss to the Clippers.
Well, hopefully Kyrie keeps that in mind as he's a free agent this offseason and wanting to stay the hell out of L.A. as they're filming Space Jam 2 or Uncle Drew 2 or whatever sequel he's going to be in this summer. But Kyrie played great last night, triple-double. Can you believe that was only his second triple-double of his career?
That was kind of surprising. But if you think about it, not so much when back, you know, in his days playing Cleveland with LeBron, LeBron was more of the facilitator than Kyrie Irving was.
Yeah,
so that,
true.
So I guess that really doesn't surprise. I mean, it did surprise me, like, when, you know, for sure. And I got a kick out of the fact that the entire Celtics bench knew he got it. Like, when he grabbed that rebound, I don't know if you noticed, they all went nuts, which can we finally put to bed this crap that they really don't like him and that they despise him and that he's disconnected and detached from his teammates? Because you don't fake it like that. I just, that narrative that went on, I hope we can finally put that to bed with that reaction to him getting that triple-double. But anyway, not to go into that again, but Kyrie Irving, triple-double. Last night, he had a little extra bit of a giddy-up or a pep in his step. Like, he looked like all NBA Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Selected for Team USA Kyrie Irving. You know, he was unstoppable last night. And hopefully he's just clicking and hitting that stride just in time for the playoffs. And we'll see here in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, 31 points, 10 rebounds, 12 assists. We got our asses handed to us in the first quarter, and he was the only one keeping us close. I think he scored 10 in the first quarter. And then he was just such a facilitator. I mean, some of those passes to free up Jalen for those three balls in the third corner, I think he had 5 assists in the fourth quarter alone. Agreed. And, I mean, you talk all about the plane ride to San Francisco where the team really bonded and came together. I mean, honestly, I think what happened is he said some dumb things at the beginning of the season. He said some things that probably pissed off Jalen and pissed off Tatum. And, you know, they talked about it. And now they're in a better spot now, and they're trying to win basketball games. And the issue isn't Kyrie Irving. The issue is trying to get minutes and trying to get these folks to have enough minutes to really find their flow. And you see someone like Jaylen Brown, 22 points last night. When he's feeling the shot like that and hitting three-pointers, getting to the rim and playing the defense that he plays, I mean, that's someone you want in not just in your playoff rotation, that's someone you want in crunch time. That's someone who has all-star potential. And it's a matter of just getting these guys into the flow. And I think that is by far more important than anything else that's happening out there is how do they juggle Jalen? How do they juggle Hayward and Marcus Morris? And how do they make sure that there's enough minutes to go around where these guys are finding their flow?
Yeah, and that's gonna be the biggest test. That's where Brad Stevens is really gonna earn his money here come playoff time, where he just has to commit to a rotation. He has to commit to roles for these guys, and then at the same time, you know, they have to be accepting, you know, of them as well. Last night they played without two guys who have been playing minutes for them: Terry Rozier and Daniel Theis missing the game due to illness, the same illness that I guess Marcus Smart was fighting too, but Smart still ended up playing, which that just shows me the type of player that Marcus Smart is.
Yeah.
But you were down another guy in the rotation that you felt a need to play, you know, X amount of minutes, you know, in a Terry Rozier. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just speaking more to the, you know, I think that something you and I have discussed both on this podcast and then privately mm-hmm. about this team, that, you know, they have like one guy too many in their rotation.
Yeah.
And come playoff time, it's just going to depend on matchups and, you know, or on series. Like it could be one series that fits Terry Rozier. It could be one series that, you know, fits Jalen Brown or Gordon Hayward a little bit more. You know, those are calls they're going to have to make. I mean, you see other NBA teams doing the same thing. Like this past week, Mike Malone announcing that Isaiah Thomas, after playing, what, you know, 10-12 games with the Nuggets and, you know, having a couple moments, you know, IT moments, he's out of the rotation because the Nuggets have gone down to their 8-man rotation, you know, looking to get in the flow for, you know, for come playoff time. And, you know, the Celtics are going to have to make a similar move, I think. Maybe not necessarily 8, but definitely 9, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Semi Ojeleye, Time Lord Williams, not playing.
Don't you love how Robert Williams gets a standing ovation like every time he comes in the game? It's unbelievable.
He's a dynamic player.
It's hilarious. Well, he had some good minutes last night.
Yeah.
I actually liked him playing on the floor with Horford.
I like that. How about that Horford, Williams, Irving, Hayward, Brown? I think that was the stretch at the end of the third corner that went on that 12-0 run. And they needed it because Baines had 5 fouls and they needed the height with, was it Giles and Colby Stein that the Kings tried out there? That was a fun lineup out there, especially when Jalen's hitting three balls in a row like the way that he did.
Oh, he was on fire. Yep.
The double big man lineup actually worked out pretty well last night with both Horford and Baines out there. And you forget that those two started almost every game together last year, and they've moved away from it this year, both because of injuries and I think there's fewer teams where that style of play and ends up making sense. But as long as Baines isn't shooting threes, I know that pisses you off more than anything.
He needs to stop doing that. I mean, that was cute in the postseason last year, and I'll admit needed at times in the postseason last year.
Yeah.
But now that, you know, the Celtics are, knock on wood, healthy here and the capable offensive players that they have, I need the Aaron Baines three to disappear from the Celtics offensive system.
There's value in people knowing that he can do it, so he can stretch the floor a little bit. But yeah, he missed one last night, and I swear I felt like he missed five because like, he needs to stop doing this. So he's one of he has the Marcus Smart 3-point shooting from last year, which is sub 30%, and pisses you off every time he does it, especially with the folks around him. So we'll see. What do you think about the Pacers, Sixers, Celtics dogfight here down the stretch, all within two games, about 13 games left in the season? We have the tiebreaker on Philly. Philly has the tiebreaker on the Pacers, and we have two games left versus the Pacers. Our season is 1-1 right now. I guess, how do you see it unfolding down the stretch here?
I see they have a shot at three. I think that's highly unlikely. I see the Celtics actually finishing in the four spot. And to be honest with you, that's where I want them to be. I want them in the four spot against Indiana in the first round, although some people are comparing the Pacers to the Celtics of last year. You know,
I was going to say that. Anyway. Yep.
And I think, not to steal your argument, your thought there, I apologize.
No, it's fine.
But I think there is some credence to that argument for sure. However, I would still prefer them over the Sixers in a playoff series, despite the fact that the Celtics do have the Sixers' number, for some reason. I don't know if it's Brett. I think one of the reasons is I think the Celtics have a huge advantage when it comes to the coaching side. I think Brad Stevens, Brett Brown, it's not even close.
We saw that last year. We saw that in the playoffs last year.
Right. And I think in a seven-game series, you would give the Celtics an advantage partially because of that. And I just think the Celtics actually just match up very well against the Sixers. However, just all the different, with the fact that the Sixers have, basically three all-stars, three and a half, some people argue Tobias Harris would be.
Don't sleep on J.J. Redick.
I'll give you that too. Not that it's an all-star, but someone that's sort of a threat. Although we'll keep talking Sixers later. That's why he's a reason why the Sixers won't make a deep playoff run in my mind, because he's someone that they'll feel needs to be on the floor in crunch time, and he's going to get so exposed at the defensive end of the floor.
We did last year. They were just posting him up every single possession.
And he can't be on the floor at the end of games for that reason, but they'll insist that he be out there. So but not to totally, start talking Sixers as much as I want to. I see the Celtics finishing in the four. I see them actually winning the last two games they have against the Pacers, which will help us. And then couple that with the tough stretch that the Pacers have coming up here. I think they have to go out west, and I think they play Golden State, Portland, the Clippers, and there's one other team out west.
I think they play Denver twice, too.
They play Denver twice as well.
Yeah.
So nice comeback for them last night. They were losing by double digits, 15 points to Oklahoma City in Indiana. They came back and ended up winning the game. So, that shows you that they really are kind of for real. But I still think that's the better matchup for the Celtics, and particularly if the Celtics had home court advantage. You'd have to like the Celtics probably taking care of that series in six. I like finishing in four because I think we match up better with Milwaukee. And I know that's crazy to say, given that they have the best record in the NBA, but I really do. I really do believe that. Toronto scares me so much more than Milwaukee does.
Yeah.
And I'd love for the Raptors and the Sixers to kind of beat the hell out of each other in that second round. That's how I'd like to see it shape up. And that's really how I kind of do see it shaping up.
Yeah.
Sixers finishing three, the Celtics four, and the Pacers five.
Yeah. And I think that's the ideal scenario for the Celtics. And would it be better to be the three and play either Brooklyn or Detroit? I mean, you're probably better in that role, certainly, than if you're the five going to Indiana, who's the four, and not looking ahead to the Bucks and Raptors in round two. But I think honestly, Philly's schedule is very easy down the stretch. They are still too temperamental in terms of how they play, but I think they'll get it done and lock up that three seed. Indy will fall back, and it kind of comes down to these two matchups between the Celtics and Pacers. You play twice. I went to the Celtics-Pacers game where we won by like 25. I think we scored like 135 points or something like that. That was a fun game. So, you know, if you take care of business those two games, you feel pretty good about getting the four. And I think we'll save our player predictions for when they come. The way I see it with the Pacers, I think we beat them either way. But if we're the four, I think we take care of them in five games. And if we're the five, I think it goes seven. And one, anything can happen in seven games. And two, those are two extra games, a lot more miles on Al Horford, for one, but also Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, and the rest of the crew. So getting that four seed is desirable. And I mean, hopefully Philly can get their shit together and win the games they're supposed to get to that three seed. Because as much as I'd love a rematch between Celtics and Sixers, let's do that at the end of May. Let's not do that at the end of April, please.
Right. And I think if you're the Celtics, if the Sixers can somehow knock off Toronto, you know, if things go according to plan, and of course that also is contingent on the Celtics beating the Bucks, which, while I like the matchup, an extremely tall task.
Yes.
I think if you're the Celtics, I mean, I hate to say you're doing cartwheels to be playing the 76ers on the road in the Eastern Conference Finals.
You are.
You absolutely are.
They have won 21 out of 25 against them.
You're licking your chops. You're absolutely licking your chops.
Mostly because you just beat the 60-plus win Milwaukee team is another reason why you're still licking at that moment. But yes,
and you don't have to face Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam and Serge Ibaka and all these guys on the Raptors roster that just seem to eat the Celtics alive for some reason.
And now Gasol too, right?
Well, yeah. Well, Gasol, yes, but I mean, those three in particular, just historically, those three guys. At this, I mean, Kawhi Leonard presents problem for anybody, but Pascal Siakam plays like an All NBA player against the Celtics, and Ibaka just presents matchup problems as well. So, you know, if you can somehow avoid the Toronto Raptors in any shape or form. You know, in the NBA playoffs, or at least stay off from having to play them until you absolutely have to, which would be the Eastern Conference Finals. That's the perfect setup if you're the Celtics.
Yep. And I hear you, although the counter argument is going to be, does Giannis not present similar matchup problems? And does the supporting cast of Middleton and Bledsoe and Brogdon and Mirotic and Lopez, do they not also, Ilyasova, do they not also present similar problems? But you know, I think there's some confidence from having beaten him last year, and I think that series may come down to someone like Eric Bledsoe. And at least in our minds, he really crapped the bed last year in that playoff series, and it was outshadowed by Terry Rozier. So I know that's still fresh in our minds, which is probably why we're maybe underrating them a little bit compared to the performance that they've had as a team this year.
Yeah, you just how many names did you just list off there? You know, I think you went seven deep talking about the Bucks. The Bucks are going to have everybody come the playoffs can't play all those guys.
Yep.
And I there's only one basketball. Yep. And a lot of those guys you just named are guys that need to have the basketball in their hand. And there's going to be one guy in particular that they're going to want to have the ball quite a bit. So, I mean, it's almost like in that series, you're just going to say, well, hey, we'll let Giannis get his because we have no one that can truly stop him.
Yep.
We have people who might be able to slow him down, a Baines, a Horford, Semi Ojeleye, you know, did a really good job on him last year in the playoffs. But the key will be not letting guys like Middleton and Bledsoe have, you know, otherworldly playoff series. And, you know, I like our chances of slowing them down more than the guys with the Raptors, that's all.
Yeah. So one thing that we should talk about is I guess Philly, and I guess your strong feelings that they are a very overrated team, and they get way too much credit by the media, by just the kind of talking heads who know the league, by fans. And I think I'm a little bit higher on Philly. So you've already started to tease it a little bit, but I'll just let you go for a little bit here.
I, don't see it happening because in today's NBA, your best player can't be. He puts up incredible numbers. He's an all-star starter. He's a great player. But Joel Embiid is someone in a seven-game series that is extremely easy to neutralize.
Well, how is he easy? Is he easy to neutralize? I don't see that argument.
Today's NBA, Pat, is not built for the slow-footed big man, and that is what Joel Embiid is. And if he had, if you had a guy in Ben Simmons that was a little bit more, you know, not so one-dimensional in his offensive game, the fit would be there a little bit more. You know, if your second-best player was truly a multi-dimensional offensive player as opposed to a guy who just can simply take it to the basket, you know, they couldn't get past the Celtics team last year. I know they have Jimmy Butler and they have no depth whatsoever. The other three contenders, for lack of a better term, the Eastern Conference, all have deeper teams 1-9. And I know we've already talked about how maybe too much depth is a bit of an issue, but the Sixers can't go 8 deep like the other three teams in the East. Celtics, Bucks, Raptors all have deeper benches. And in a seven-game series, I think that holds up. I really do. Until Ben Simmons, like I said, finds a jump shot, finds the ability to shoot a three-pointer. It's just you saw it last year in the playoffs. The Celtics just sagged off him, and he was a non-factor. And the big thing, too, Joel Embiid with his health, it's the biggest question mark of any star in the Eastern Conference right now. I think is Joel Embiid and his knee, and how healthy is he truly? He looked really good in that game against the Pacers when he came back off injury, and they were down by 15 for a good amount of that game. Great comeback by them. Yeah. You know, credit where credit is due. There, of the four contenders, I put them as number four.
Mm-hmm. a passionate argument as always, and. I think the way I look at it is I think Joel Embiid is someone who you can build a team around. I think he presents unique matchup problems, both offensively and defensively. He's extended his range. No, you don't want him shooting threes, but the fact that he can draw your center out there allows Simmons to do some pretty interesting things in terms of moving the ball down low, getting Redick and Harris shots, getting Butler to the mid range. And my big concerns with them. One is the injury with Embiid. I think if he's down, it's a completely different team, and honestly, not a very good team. Two, Jimmy Butler is just a complete wild card, and he could be a top 15 player in the league, or he could be someone who submarines your team, and you just never know. There was already some of that rumbling with him and Embiid, where Embiid's points were going down once they got Butler. Back in the fall, and that was a little bit of discontent because Butler's going to get his shots. He's a free agent. He wants as much. He wants to do as well as he can this offseason. But honestly, my biggest concern is Embiid, Simmons, Butler, Harris is a pretty good /great four-man rotation at the end of the games. I don't know who you put out there as their fifth person. If it's Redick, he's going to get abused on the defensive end, just like what happened last year. It'll just be nonstop posting up Redick, getting him fouls, getting to the line, and they're just going to isolate on him. But who else do you put out there? Do you put out TJ McConnell? Not the same offensive player, and honestly, not that great of a defensive player. Is it Jonathan Simmons that you're going to put out there as like a swing guy? He's not the answer. He's not going to do anything offensively for you when he's not that great of a defensive player. I just don't know what they're going to do, and I feel like the Bucks, Raptors and Celtics are all so deep that you're not going to be able to hide a Redick on somebody. It was usually Marcus Smart, right, who was the one posting up Redick. And I would say he's our least skilled offensive player when you have that Horford, Irving, Hayward, Brown, Tatum, Morris, whoever you put out there. I just think, and you could do the same with Milwaukee and the Raptors, right? They're just going to isolate on that person and really just change the game on that front. So you can't do offensive defense the whole game. I don't think Brett Brown's figured that out. So I actually see, I think there's a lot of buzz around, and we'll talk about the playoff matchups that we're most excited about next. There's a lot of buzz around the Sixers-Nets potential series. I actually think the Sixers will sweep the Nets. I think the Sixers will dominate any team that doesn't have the ability to go five deep in the offensive on the offensive floor the way that the Celtics, Raptors, and Bucks do. But I actually think the Sixers are in big trouble once they get to that second round. And yes, I would love an upset, Sixers over Raptors, if we're playing the Bucks. And if we end up getting past Milwaukee, then we have to play Philly, who we have their number, and not Toronto. But it may rely on Kawhi not being fully healthy, or Toronto not fixing its playoff abilities the way that they've done in the past to get through them, because I don't see them matching up very well with the other three strong teams in the East. So I guess that's my more optimistic than you, but also don't see them playing too deep into May unless some crazy things happen.
Yeah, you made my point for me. You did. I really thought you were about to take a total 180 on them. Just by the on what I said, so I'm actually kind of surprised you were as negative about it as I was.
I think they're the three seed. I think they're going to sweep in the first round.
Sure they are. Of course they're a good regular season team, but just come playoff time, I just think the ability to chess match them is you know, for the other three teams in the East is a higher level, a higher success rate for those three than it would be for the Sixers against them, until they prove us otherwise. And hell, that's possible. I mean, they're talented enough too. Like you said, the biggest thing is if Jimmy Butler figures it out. And I really have no confidence in that being the case. Yeah. If he does, then yeah, watch out. Absolutely watch out. But that remains to be seen.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. Let's shift to I guess playoff matchups that are most enticing to you. And the good news is, in both the East and the West, there's a lot of movement right now. There's a lot of teams that are packed pretty tightly. You look at the West, you got Golden State and Denver a game apart at the top of the standings. You look to the 3-4-5, you have Houston, you have the Trailblazers and the Thunder all within half a game right now. And then you have the Jazz, Spurs, and Clippers 6-7-8 all within half a game. So pretty much any playoff matchup can happen, which is kind of exciting. I guess as you look at what could unfold, what's the matchup one or two that you're kind of most excited about potentially seeing come April in the first round I'm talking about?
I think I took a look at it this morning. If the playoffs were to start today, I mean, are we really going to say the Sixers and the Celtics because it's a half game? I mean, do we really think that's going to happen?
We're not going to say that.
We're not going to say that. And we've talked about that ad nauseum already. I think you got to go out west. That Blazer, Trailblazer, Oklahoma City series will be an all-out rock fight.
That's a nice one.
That ends up being the case, especially if Portland ends up with the home court. That Trailblazer team came in a couple weeks ago, and just Damian Lillard ran circles around the Celtics. You know, I think the Celtics made a little bit of a run, you know, kind of made it interesting there at the end. But that Portland team is very, very good. And I think they probably got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder for how they lost in the fashion they did to New Orleans in last year's playoffs, getting swept out, I believe. I think that right now has, if that ends up being the matchup, to be a highly, highly entertaining series. And then a close second would be the 3-6 matchup, I think, in the West if it started today. Houston and Utah. I think that would be a lot of fun too. So I think those are your two, and that makes the most sense. The 3-6 and the 4-5 in the West, you know, would be the most enticing matchups. But if those end up holding, you know, to see that group in Utah has had a really, really good season, you know, led by Donovan Mitchell, you know, and then the Rockets just playing at the level that they seem to be playing at right now and kind of hitting their stride, looking like you could arguably say the hottest team out West right now, you know, with Golden State, despite being at the top of the West, going through some issues of their own. By the way, how great was that? The clip of Steve Kerr saying how he was so sick and tired of Draymond. He's finally seeing everything that we've all been saying and seeing, you know, since the Warriors started this run here. But Houston right now playing like the best team in the West.
Yeah.
But Utah would put up a good fight. You'd pick Houston in the series, but Utah would get me. That series goes at least 6 in my mind, I would say. those would be my picks. Yeah. Obviously out west.
I completely forgot that the Pelicans swept the Trailblazers last year. Yeah. That sounds crazy. That sounds crazy thinking about it. Yeah, I mean, I think the exciting part is that the 3-4-5 in the West, similar to the East, right? It's between Sixers, Celtics, and Pacers. Two of them are going to play each other. Same with the West. The Rockets, Blazers, and Thunder. Honestly, all three potential matchups I love. Rockets, Thunder. I mean, Harden versus his old squad. That's a fun matchup right there. Rockets and Trailblazers would be a good one. And then the Blazers Thunder, as you mentioned, which is kind of how it's shaped up today. I see all of those going 6 or 7 games pretty easily. So to change a little bit. And did you know the Spurs have won 6 straight, by the way? Like, they're so boring.
But
they just keep doing it. Yes, they just keep doing it. And I'm not going to pick this because Spurs Nuggets is probably the most boring of the potential matchups, but you know, they have a chance in that series. They could definitely take that series. My pick is actually going to be the 1-8, and the Warriors have to be looking at the standings right now, saying like, the Clippers, really? We got to play them. And I think they'd still win the series, but there's just so much history there between the great matchups back before the Warriors were the Warriors, as well as I think in their first season they finally got over the hump. I think that might have been the there was the Donald Sterling series too.
Jackson was still the coach, right?
Yeah, that would have been right before.
I think it ended up being a 7-game series the first time they played.
Yeah, Chris Paul, I think, hit the series winner.
But to me,
that's a pretty interesting and exciting matchup. And there's been a lot of buzz around Doc Rivers maybe getting some Coach of the Year love with what he's done for this Clippers team. And it's something that we've always known. We were on the fire Doc train early in his Celtics tenure because he could not coach young players. But once he's got that team of veterans and teams and players who really know their role, he knows how to get the most out of them. And maybe he's on the golf course during the day, but he's able to do what he needs to do at night. And you look at that Clippers squad with what Lou Williams is doing off the bench. Gallinari has turned into the player that I think a lot of people thought that he would be when he signed that contract. Patrick Beverley, constantly just a pain in the ass. SGA having a good rookie year. Honestly, like the two moves they've made too. I mean, you'd think getting rid of someone like Tobias Harris would.
Yeah, they traded their best player at the deadline.
They traded Harris, and the folks that they've gotten back, and whether it's what Landry Shamet's doing, whether it's Zubac from the deal they made with the Lakers and getting a pretty quality young center.
What are the Lakers doing, by the way?
I mean, they don't know what they're doing. There's too much to talk about that. But I actually think that would be a fun series, and I think the Clippers would actually stretch that series to 6 or 7 games. And you know, if the Warriors aren't focused, they better watch out. So to me, that would be a fun one just to see Doc coaching again in the limelight, and crazy to see them competing even after getting rid of Griffin and Chris Paul and DeAndre, completely different team. But maybe a rapid rebuild similar to the way that Boston has done.
Yeah, he does deserve some Coach of the Year votes. I mean, he probably won't get it, but you know, it will be announced that, you know, he did end up receiving some. There are even some silly murmurs when the Celtics were going through all their crap that Doc would be a better coach for this Celtics team than Brad Stevens would be. And I mean, that just shows you that, you know, the high regard that a lot of people that cover the Celtics and, you know, are attached to the Celtics still hold Doc Rivers in, and there's no question about that. That would be an entertaining one. Not normally do you expect a 1-8 to be to be entertaining. I'll give you another one. Let's go to the East, and let's go to one of the other top and bottom matchups that I think would be interesting if it ends up holding. Toronto and Detroit, and with Dwayne Casey, the former coach of the Raptors.
That's right.
And his Detroit Pistons heading into a series in Toronto. You got a feeling he'd be extra jacked up for that series. You'd feel like he'd have his guys ready to go, and they'd want to win that for their head coach. I mean, you got to think some emotions would probably run a little extra high just because of that connection. Him not being obviously less than a year removed from coaching that Raptors team in the playoffs himself. I think that one could, you know, could lend some, you know, could produce some drama for sure. I mean, maybe go six games, maybe. But the storylines would be interesting in that one as well.
Potentially, and I think the fact that Casey has gotten this team to where they are, playing pretty well, says he's a really good coach. He just unfortunately could never beat LeBron James, which got him fired in Toronto. You're driving right now. I'm the one who's looking at my computer. So how many players could you name on the Pistons? Because I could maybe name three. Let's see how many you can do.
Andre Drummond.
Yes.
Blake Griffin.
Yes.
Reggie Jackson.
So that's the three I would have named.
Okay, well, let me keep going.
Who else you got?
Who's that dude that played for Duke?
Kennard. Okay, I would have said who's that dude that played for Duke.
God. They traded Stanley Johnson. He's not there anymore.
He's not there. I feel like we can name five for pretty much any other playoff team.
Is Ish Smith still there?
Yeah, I'll give you Ish Smith. He doesn't play that much, but I'll give you Ish Smith.
He's on the roster. You said on the roster. That does count. come on. I gotta be able to find at least one more.
You got five. I'll give you five. And I'm sure Ish Smith, Luke Kennard, I'm sure Ish Smith, Luke Kennard, Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, and Blake Griffin play together as a five-man unit. So you nailed a five-man unit, and you just also told me that they would give the Raptors some trouble, which I'll let you. We'll see if that matchup ends up happening, and we'll see how it gets determined on the courts.
Give me some other ones. Give me some other ones from the Pistons.
Langston Galloway and Bruce Brown Jr. and Wayne Ellington and Thon Maker. Glenn Robinson.
Oh, Thon Maker, that's right.
Our friend, Zaza Pachulia, who we've hated since the 2008 Atlanta Hawks first round series.
Wow,
yep, so good for Dwayne Casey.
Maybe Dwayne Casey's making an argument for back-to-back NBA coach of the year.
Exactly, with different teams.
With different teams, that's probably never ever happened.
To be fair, Blake Griffin is playing very well, and Drummond was lost for.
As is Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, and Drummond was lost for a while, but I think he's now found his way. They have some good players, but good for Dwayne Casey. anything else you got? Before we started the pod, I was saying there's a chance I try to find my way to the matchup between the third and fourth best NBA teams in the league and the number one and two seeds in the West, the Warriors and Nuggets, when I'm out in SF next week. So might try to find my way over to that matchup. We'll see if the Warriors are actually motivated and focused during that game. But
you actually disappointed me a bit when you said you're going to be in San Francisco, because I was going to monitor ticket prices all weekend and see if you wanted to go check out Celtics Nuggets on Monday night. It's the IT's video tribute.
Oh my God, they're finally doing it.
Yeah, it's too bad he's still not playing though.
It's gonna be. It is so sad. I feel bad. I mean, it was such a fun run, and we started this podcast right after the 2017 season ended, and he was coming off, a season where he scored 29 points a game, king of the fourth. And was such a fun player to watch all year. And sometimes sports is ruthless.
50 points in that game two against the Wizards.
Might have been 53. That was crazy. That was crazy. And sometimes sports is cruel. And Danny did what Danny had to do, which is get Kyrie Irving. And you'd have to think that him and Brad felt that what Isaiah was doing was maybe not sustainable. And someone like Kyrie is going to give you a better chance to win both in the short term and the long term. So you hate to see what's happened for IT the last year and a half, getting traded to Cleveland, obviously never having a good fit there. that weird time with the Lakers that didn't make sense for anyone involved. And now Denver, which I actually thought would be a great spot for him, but they've played so well, they don't have spots. They don't have a spot for him.
The fact that he couldn't play from day one hurt him. The fact that he couldn't play from day one hurt him in that situation, because the rest of their guards have just taken off.
And there's a lot of good point guards out there. And someone like Phoenix, which he would never go to given his past history. And unfortunately, now he has past history with half the league. Would take someone like Terry Rozier over him.
I mean, the thing for IT, you know, it's just that, you know, he came in too late, you know. And another thing that'll back that up is he was reunited in Denver with Mike Malone, who was his coach in Sacramento, where he kind of had his success before he signed with Phoenix and then ultimately got traded to the Celtics, you know, the following season. So the fit was there, you know, and the relationship was there. And I'm sure that was a very difficult conversation for Mike Malone to have with Isaiah Thomas, but he's got to put the franchise first. And with the season they had, he can't afford to mess with it. And if he doesn't feel IT's in his top eight, which he's not when you look at the roster, then you got to make the calls like that.
Yep. Agreed. I guess before we close out, any thoughts? We haven't spent any time talking about MVP. But any thoughts around who you think that would be this season? I think there's probably three that have a shot at it.
Yeah, I'd say it's got to be Harden, Paul George, or Giannis.
Yep, those are the three.
And I mean, I almost say you got to give it to Giannis, best player on the best team. You know, that logic. But I think you could really. I mean, Harden, it's really been of late. You know, you go with like the complete body of work from the season. I think after Giannis, I think it's Paul George, and then it's Harden. But if it was Harden, I wouldn't be surprised either. Those are the three. I think if I had to pick, I think it'd be Giannis.
Yeah, I think Giannis is the right answer, and I think part of it is, I mean, what Harden did in the middle of the season, I've never seen anyone do before, scoring how many, like 35 points per game, and. For almost the entire season now, but he's actually really struggled of late. The last 10 games, it looks like he's hitting 25% of his threes, so struggling a little bit, even though Houston is winning. I think the team has now fully come together a little bit, but yeah, what Giannis has done for the entire year is pretty impressive, offensively and defensively. He's definitely a far better defensive player than Harden is, and yeah, I mean, Paul George in a normal year would be right up there. The way that he's played defensively, he might win Defensive Player of the Year, much less what he's done on the offensive end of the floor. In a year that Westbrook has not really played that well, taking this OKC team and propelling them to a top four, top five team in the West. And it really, we'll give another Lakers dig too. Man, if he was on the Lakers, that's a whole different scenario happening right now in LA than what they're dealing with right now.
Yeah, but you know, things don't always unfold the way people feel they will. And he saw the fit in Oklahoma City, and that gives not to go into this, but that situation, Oklahoma City, where he ended up staying there and re-upping, you know, after many people thought it was going to be one and done, Oklahoma City, and he was going to be on his way to LA. That gives you hope to any team other than the Lakers. Seemingly acquires Anthony Davis this offseason. You know, if you win and you succeed and you put you have a winning culture and environment that, you know, a guy sees he can be successful in, there's a good chance he can keep him around. So it's well worth the risk. And, props to Sam Presti for, you know, pulling the trigger on that deal when people were kind of questioning it when it happened. But it's worked out well. And, I don't think it would shock either one of us if you saw the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference Finals.
Nope.
You know, come the end of May. So
that'd be fun if they were playing Golden State again. That'd be a fun one. So I think we both have Giannis there, which could mean a Giannis and Coach Bud sweep for Coach of the Year and MVP. As much as we gave Doc Rivers love, what Budenholzer has done in Milwaukee likely deserves an award there. So probably not going to have too much debate on that one.
No, I think he's certainly going to take that award home. And then, you know, Mike Malone
out
in Denver should get some votes too. That's probably 1 and 2, if I had to guess.
Yeah, maybe McMillan and Indy as well, or what Atkinson's doing in Brooklyn. But yeah, I think Coach Bud and Doc are probably my 1-2. All righty, well, home stretch here. It should be pretty exciting. Sometimes the end of the season gets pretty boring if all the playoffs are set, but a lot of matchups moving around, and I think a lot of teams have a vested interest of getting to that higher seed. So we will likely catch up in early April. Otherwise, have a great St. Patrick's Day weekend. Wear green for me, and green 18 all the way, right?
Speaking of St. Patrick's Day, there's got to be a Bruins game tomorrow night, right? Because that's got to be the only way to explain why the Celtics and Hawks are playing at 12:30 on a Saturday.
Let me check the TD Garden calendar. Riveting podcast material here. Do they do a Dropkick Murphys concert, actually?
The Celtics are playing at 12:30.
Yeah, Bruins at 7 p.m.
That'd be okay. Because I was thinking, why are the Celtics and Hawks playing at 12:30 on Saturday? You know, you're setting that up to be like a 91-78 snooze fest.
I thought you were going to say you're setting it up to be a pretty aggressive day for a Boston sports fan who decides to catch Celtics Hawks at 12:30 and keep the day going until Bruins Jackets at 7 p.m. But
if I was in a different phase in my life. I would have already put that idea to see if you'd want to sell it, but nonetheless, other responsibilities at this point.
we can save it for December.
Yes, as we tend to. Sounds like a plan.
All right, well, safe rest of your drive.
Thank you, sir.
All right, talk soon.